Hi, friends. Welcome to Thread HQ. I'm Patrice.
And I'm Jordan.
And we've got some more creepy stories from Let's Not Meet.
So this first story is by user Mara Grace. It was posted 12 years ago, so it's kind of older. Many may have heard this story before, but it's a doozy. Like, it's pretty creepy. It's rated one of the better stories, creepy stories on Reddit. It's titled, Terrorized for 2 Hours. This happened when I was in college. I lived in Isla Vista, the student community at UCSB, notorious for being a party school. It fully lived up to its reputation. I liked to party, but holy shiz, these people were off the wall. As such, there were a lot of people who put themselves in dangerous situations, drinking to excess, not being careful, not locking doors, etc. It had a very isolated and insular vibe, and anyone who was hanging around who wasn't college-aged immediately looked out of place and strange. One night, after having a few drinks, I came home to my small house where I lived with two other girls probably around 2:30 a.m. We were all serious students. I was probably the least serious, actually. And when we partied, it was not your typical UCSB mega-rager. More like a small get-together with friends. We would often have a few people spend the night, sleep on our furniture, or in our beds, as the case may be. That night, my roommates had had a few people over who I didn't know, and I saw when I'd returned home that one of them had opted to sleep on the couch from the shadow that I saw there. I didn't turn the light on so I wouldn't wake anyone up, but as I was passing the couch to enter my bedroom, I noticed that the figure was lying very stiff. He just had this weird energy to him. He was lying down, but it was like he was putting all of his energy into lying as still and as rigid as possible.
Oh, why?
That's weird. I paused, and the guy quickly jerked his head to face me, without moving his limbs so quickly that it startled me. I could see his wide open eyes glinting in the dark.
Creepy.
Yeah. Figuring that I'd startled him, or that he was drunk or maybe on some kind of stimulant and unable to sleep, I just hurried past into my bedroom and locked the door. The dude made me nervous and I wasn't taking any chances. I fell asleep. At 4:30 a.m., I woke up. There was a strange sound at the door, almost like somebody was drumming their fingers against the wood very quietly. I lay still and listened. There were more quiet sounds like someone scratching the door with their fingers, which got louder and louder until it was clear that he was using both hands and scratching as fast and as hard as possible. It created an extremely loud and intimidating sound that filled me with fear.
Oh my gosh.
I got my cell phone and texted my roommate because I was afraid to make a sound. Your friend is freaking me out. Is he coked out? Can you talk to him? He's banging and scratching on my door. She didn't text me back, probably because she was asleep. I texted my other roommate to the same effect, covering all my bases. Keep in mind that the scratching has been going on at this point for a couple minutes. I have no idea how he could have sustained it. Scratching a wooden door with your fingernails can't feel good.
Yeah.
He also grabbed at the knob and jiggled it super forcefully. Ugh. Because neither of them answered, I decided to call and really wake them up, though I was scared to make a sound. I know it sounds stupid, but there was something seriously horrifying about being teased like this through the door.
Well, it doesn't sound stupid. That is terrifying.
It's creepy. I knew that he was trying to terrify me. I felt like a little kid, but I could tell this guy was effed up or something, and maybe the police needed to be called. And I wanted to loop one of my roommates in since it was one of their friends. The scratching stopped abruptly, and I called my roommate, who answered sleepily. Yo, your friend is messed up. Can you please deal with it? Do we need to call the cops? He's seriously scaring me, and he was scratching at my bedroom door really effing weird. She didn't say anything for several seconds, and when she did speak, her voice had no sleepiness in it at all. What friend? She said. That effing guy that was sleeping on the couch, I said. She was quiet again. We didn't have any guys over, she said. Call the police. My adrenaline surged, and I told her to please lock the bedroom door as quickly as possible. I realized that I hadn't heard scratching in a while, and I had no clue where the dude had gone.
She was telling her friend to lock her, her own bedroom
door. Lock your bedroom door.
Yeah.
Suddenly, I heard a loud banging in the other end of the house, where my roommates, Lauren and Monica, shared a bedroom. The bangs were followed by the sound of them screaming in fear. I quickly dialed the police as this maniac proceeded to bang against the luckily locked bedroom door of my two roommates as they screamed.
Oh my gosh.
The heaviness of the blows left no doubt that he was trying to break the door down.
Oh my gosh.
So he was like really hitting
it.
I told the 911 operator the situation and she dispatched two squad cars. The police in Isla Vista are generally used to peeling drunks off the sidewalk and breaking up brawling frat bros. This was really serious and strange, and I think the dispatcher got the sense from my tone how terrified I was, and she stayed on the phone with me. At one point, the banging stopped and everything was quiet for a while. I talked with the dispatcher and suddenly looked down to see that this guy had slipped his fingers through the 1-inch gap between my door and the floor and was just kind of waggling them around,
making
this weird growling sound. I screamed and backed away, which is my biggest regret about this situation, since when I look back, it would have been so awesome to just stomp the shiz out of those fingers and hear the guy howl in pain.
That's true.
Yeah, that was my thought. When the cops rolled up, I heard running and the sound of our sliding glass door opening and closing, and then he was gone. The cops never caught him.
Oh, no.
He had broken in through our side door by jimmying the lock somehow. My door was covered in what turned out to be huge gouges he'd made using a pair of scissors, which he discarded on the ground before he left. What terrifies me most about this was that I walked right past him. I looked him right in the face. I realized now that he was not trying to sleep on drugs, but was lying so stiff like that because he was hiding. He probably heard me open the door and freaked out because he hadn't realized there was another girl living there and tried to blend into the couch in the darkness.
Oh my gosh.
The commenter said, "That is terrifying. I can't even imagine. You made me get up and block the sliding door with a metal pole. You should seriously consider doing that." OP said, "Yeah, that would have been smart. It did not even occur to me." I don't like how common it is that the creepy people in these stories get away. It's quite discomforting.
Yeah.
Said another commenter.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Isn't that creepy?
That's so creepy.
So lock your doors. Make sure they're extra secure.
Yeah. So did he get through the sliding glass door, or it was a side door?
It sounded like he got through the sliding glass door.
Well, but they talked about jimmying the lock. Jimmying the lock.
On the sliding door.
Oh, okay. When I think of jimmying a lock, I think of like a normal doorknob.
Yeah. Well, sliding doors, they just have like a little latch that you kind of just flip.
Okay.
And then it quote unquote locks it, you know. But
yeah.
He probably was able to like slip something skinny in between there and pull it down, you know.
So. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And that's why a lot of people will put a stick in between
the bar.
Or a bar.
Sometimes the bar is even built in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because those latches don't hold easy.
Wow. Oh, that is so creepy.
Yeah.
I definitely don't relate to having people just like sleep over all the time.
I know. Same.
Because I never did that in college. Like my roommates... We never had people over. That would have been really strange.
Yeah, but it kind of makes sense. You know, they were used to that kind of thing.
Yeah, so like they were at a party school and they were actually like the least of the partiers.
Uh-huh.
Like they were calmer compared to everyone else.
Yeah, stay over, you know, if you're too drunk to drive home. Like,
yeah.
And she just assumed, you know.
Yeah.
Like the perfect storm for him.
Yeah.
Creepy stuff.
All right. The user of this story is called The Jedi Bugs.
The Jedi Bugs.
This was written 5 months ago in 2025. It's called The Time I Was Hunted.
Ooh. Fun.
Yeah.
Exciting.
Back in 1998, I was a pretty broke 19-year-old guy and living with a roommate named Steve. Steve was about my age, maybe a year older. His dad had died a few years prior and had left Steve a trust fund which covered all his bills and gave him a weekly allowance on top of it until he reached a certain age, at which time he'd receive his full inheritance. Steve and I got along pretty well, but he was the kind of guy who liked to remind you if he had some degree of power over you. That aspect of his personality butted up against my own stubborn, prove-the-world-wrong attitude on a particular night, leading to the events I'm about to describe.
Oh boy.
Steve and I went over to my friend Trevor's house on a Siesta Key one night. Steve drove, as I didn't have a car. I don't remember why we went over there, and I don't even know that I really remember any other instance of the three of us hanging out. I just know that we went there later in the evening, maybe 9 or so. At some point, Steve and I got into a disagreement over something. I have no memory of what it was about, except that I seem to recall that it wasn't anything important that actually impacted our lives in any way. Something akin to disagreeing over a bit of movie trivia, or something as inconsequential as that. Steve must have felt that he was losing the debate because he took the opportunity to remind me that he had the car and I could always walk home. Now, there are a few things to note here. First, home would be a 13-mile walk. I could not have told you at that time, but I just looked it up for this telling. Second, we were at my best friend's house. I had stayed over there countless times and absolutely could have that night. Third, my best friend also had a car and would likely have given me a ride. So Steve's threat was completely empty, whether he realized it or not. But what was important to me at that moment was that Steve, the trust fund brat, wanted to exert control over me because his ego was bruised. And I was a stubborn hothead who would absolutely not stand for that crap. So I silently decided that I would walk home. Just to freaking spite him and show him that I wouldn't be intimidated. Which I think is kind of funny. I'm like, you're only hurting yourself.
Yeah. I don't care. I'll walk home.
Yeah, he's just...
So I have these other options.
Yeah, he's just trying to show, like...
I don't even care. I need the exercise.
I will walk home. Yeah. So a bit later, under the pretense of going to use the restroom, I left the room and quietly left the house and started the 13-mile walk home.
Wow.
I should note that while I knew this was a long walk, I didn't quite understand how long it was. But it didn't matter. I needed to prove my independence. It was probably 11 p.m. or so when I left the house.
Oh boy. Yeah, it's going to take a few hours.
Yeah. I anticipated that they'd come looking for me when they discovered that I had left, so I tried to stay off the main path as best I could, determined to make the whole walk in order to make my point. This may be a good place to remind you that this is in 1998, and a good 2 or 3 years before I had gotten my first cell phone.
So he's without communication right now.
Mm-hmm. The first hour and a half went by without incident. I made my way all the way to downtown Sarasota. The more direct route would have been to follow the main road along the waterfront, but I cut through the downtown, still looking to avoid Steve spotting me on his way back home. This is an area I was super comfortable with. I'd spent most of my childhood in that area, and especially in my teen years, had explored every nook and cranny of the downtown area. It was also a pretty affluent area, full of high-rise condos that look out over the Gulf of Mexico and known for theater, opera, and art galleries. As such, even past midnight, it didn't feel menacing at all, just quiet and empty. The path I'd chosen through downtown went along Pineapple Avenue, which was mostly art galleries and upscale shops. As I walked along, I saw a red hatchback sitting in the middle of the road, just a little way past an intersection up ahead of me. I noticed it had no license plate, but didn't think too much of it. I figured it was a tag applied for kind of situation. As I got nearer, the car remained stopped. The interior light was on, and I could see that there were three or four guys in there. The interior light being on made me assume they were looking at a map or something, though I couldn't make out the inside of the car well enough to see anything more than the general shapes of people. As I crossed the small intersection, maybe 30 or 40 feet away from the car now, I suddenly got a really uneasy feeling. I don't know if the car was still for just too long, or the figures inside too still, or what. I just suddenly got to feeling very ill at ease. So instead of continuing on, I casually turned down the left side of the street, and as soon as the corner of the building blocked me from their view, I bolted. This was a spot where a small access road ran behind these buildings and then connected to an alley and then another, very thin alley that ran alongside a church and ended back on Pineapple Avenue, right where the red car was. I ran this sequence of alleys and popped out just in time to see the rear end of the car vanish down the side street I had run down. At this point, I wasn't scared at all. I had the idea that the guys in the car had something unpleasant in mind for me, but I knew dang well that I had given them the shake. There's no way in heck that they'd expect me to be back where they started. He's pretty confident. Yeah. He's a confident young guy. If they were looking for me, it was going to be elsewhere. So I continued along, feeling smug. That's a good way to describe him. After 10 or 15 minutes, I pretty much had to get out on the main road because the alternatives were walking through a seedy neighborhood that I wasn't nearly as confident about as I was downtown. As I approached the first big intersection along that main road, I saw the red car again up ahead, noticeable by the lack of license plate. I kind of grinned to myself about having foiled them. On this big road, there were some cars here and there, even at this late hour, so I felt less isolated and more at ease. Until I saw the car slow to a crawl, despite not being anywhere near the light yet. Suddenly, I found myself wondering if they might have spotted me again, so I decided to just cross to the other side of the street. It's a US highway, so it's several lanes wide, with a median down the center. Being on the other side would put me a fair distance from them. But when I got to the other side, that's when I realized I was in actual danger. This red hatchback suddenly sped up, racing to the intersection ahead, and zipped over into the left lane, where it banged a tire-screeching U-turn to head back in my direction.
Oh, frick. So they're probably not just trying to ask them for directions at this point.
No. Where I had crossed was a nice green space between the History Center and the Garden Club, where a gigantic tree stood. I think it was a banyan, but I could be mistaken. On the other side of that green space was a parking lot, some buildings, and the bay. I wasn't familiar enough with what was back there to be able to pull a trick like I had before, so I climbed. I got as high into that tree as I could, as fast as I could. I always dressed in all black back then, so I was pretty confident I'd be nearly impossible to spot, as long as they didn't actually climb up after me. So I got up and nestled into the most hidden spot I could and tried to not make any noise at all. Hiding up in the tree, I was so surrounded by foliage that I couldn't see what was going on. On the plus side, that meant that they were really unlikely to see me. On the other hand, I didn't know what to prepare myself for. So I sat up there, running through scenarios in my head, trying to plan my next move. Even if I hadn't been outnumbered, flight was really my only option. As speedy and scrappy as I was, at 5'3", no fight I put up was likely to do much good. As I sat on that branch, trying to plan my next move, my blood ran cold. any remaining doubt about what was happening, any fleeting hope that I was just being paranoid, flew out the window as I heard car doors open and close, heard footsteps in the grass, and eventually an angry male voice saying, "Where is this mother effer?" Followed by a, "Look over here," or "Look over there, I'll check this area."
Jeez.
It was official. I was being hunted.
Oh my gosh. Why though?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe there are people out there like that that just randomly decide to...
Maybe they're in a gang or something.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I don't know how long I stayed up that tree. It couldn't have been more than 10 minutes, and more likely it was quite a bit less than that. But it felt like forever. At some point, I decided to risk another flight, though I can't remember what triggered it. Car doors? The car driving away? I just can't remember. I do remember jumping from that tree and landing with a hard thud and bolting back the way I had come as fast as I could, terrified that whatever sound made me feel like it was safe to come out of hiding had been a ploy to draw me out. At the intersection where they had made the U-turn was a 24-hour gas station. Of course, across both roads. All I could think was that if I could make it inside, I would be safe and I could call the police. That run is a total blur, but I remember going through the door. I remember the look on the clerk's face as she saw my panicked expression. I called the police and explained what happened, and I waited inside for them to arrive. When they got there, I went out front to meet them and explained everything to the only officer who actually spoke to me. He was not sympathetic. I had described the car in detail, as well as all the events, and he said they probably thought I was a male prostitute and were trying to pick me up. I thought to ask him if prostitutes get a lot of business by fleeing from prospective Johns and hiding in trees, but I was distracted by the sight of the red hatchback slowly cruising by, watching me talk to the police.
Yeah.
I pointed to the car and exclaimed that that was the car. The police seemed entirely uninterested. He glanced at the car for half a second and looked back at me and said, "What do you want me to do about it?"
Call him over.
Yeah.
Something.
It's like, much use you are.
Yeah.
"I don't want to walk anymore," I exclaimed. I'm sure there were better ways I could have articulated that there were people attempting to capture me for unknown nefarious purposes and that I was in fear of my life should they encounter me on the street again. But "I don't want to walk anymore" was all I was capable of in that moment. The cop pointed to the side of the police car and said, "You see what it says there? It says police, not taxi." I feel like that's really unhelpful.
Yeah. Useless cops.
Yeah. His condescending attitude was doing a great job to replace my fear with some of the brash attitude that had gotten me into this situation in the first place. So I replied, "It also says to serve and protect." "And I am asking you to protect me because I think I'm in danger." He gave a sigh like a teenager asked to do the dishes and told me that he can't take me all the way because I live in the next town and county over, but that he'd take me to the county line, which is another major intersection along the same highway, the same main highway. That was still a good 5.5 miles from my house. Again, a number I just looked up for this telling. But got me off the road for almost 3 miles and made it less likely these people would find me again. The cops dropped me off in the front of the museum, and I walked another 2 hours or so, looking over my shoulder constantly, ready to run down side streets or jump into bushes if need be. My girlfriend's house was slightly closer than my own, and with the sun now rising, I knew she'd be okay with me stopping in. In the end, I made it safely and never saw that red car again. Almost 30 years later, I still sometimes wonder what might have become of me if they had gotten their hands on me. The determination they showed in pursuing me leads me to believe that nothing I can imagine, no matter how bad, is outside the realm of possibility. So, hunting party in the red hatchback, let's not meet.
Wow. Really makes you wonder, like, what were they doing? What was their intention?
Crazy.
Human trafficking?
Yeah.
Or maybe they're just human a bunch of bullies.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, it kind of sounds like there were bullies.
Yeah. Maybe they're just a group of four guys that were bored and trying to scare someone.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Messed up either way. That's fun.
And then the cop being totally useless.
Yeah. Stupid cop. Well, that's creepy. All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to Thread Headquarters. We hope you enjoyed this creepy episode, and we'll catch you again tomorrow.
See ya.